the 2006 International AIDS Conference, Time to Deliver, brought to you by KaiserNetwork.org.
On peut encore lutter pour les protections les plus élémentaires des femmes contre la violence et la coercition sexuelle, les abus domestiques et le viol conjugal. Il est inacceptable que la violence domestique et le viol conjugal ne soient toujours pas reconnus comme des crimes dans un si grand nombre de pays. Il n'est pas acceptable que si peu d'efforts soient consacrés par notre communauté internationale à lutter contre les stéréotypes sexuels, l'une des causes structurelles de la violence contre les femmes. Le deuxième point concerne la recherche sur laquelle j'aimerais revenir, parce que la recherche est la source du progrès et la recherche est la source d'espoir. Il est essentiel que soit intensifiée une recherche au bénéfice de la santé médicale et sociale des femmes dans tous les domaines qui sont pertinents à l'épidémie du sida. C'est facile à dire, ce n'est pas facile à faire, parce que vous le savez, la culture de la recherche est une culture de l'accumulation des connaissances, mais trop souvent n'est pas une culture de résultats. Et il faut que la recherche se mobilise plus activement afin de proposer aux femmes des moyens de prévention qu'elles puissent utiliser sous leur seul contrôle quand elles le veulent et si elles le veulent. Je pense bien sûr avant tout à la recherche sur les microbicides et à la recherche sur le vaccin, mais je pense aussi, et cela n'a pas encore été évoqué, à l'importance de la recherche anthropologique et sociale qui doit être placée au cœur de la recherche sur le sida. Replacer notre réflexion sur la prévention, en particulier dans le contexte socioculturel de la famille. Comprendre les déterminants qu'il nous faut, sur lesquels il nous faut agir pour induire les changements sociaux. Madame la Présidente, le sida a été depuis le début de l'épidémie un révélateur des dysfonctionnements et des inégalités dans nos sociétés et dans notre monde. La lutte contre le sida, c'est aussi la lutte pour la dignité et la justice humaine. Celle-ci passe par le renforcement des droits des femmes et par le refus de l'inégalité entre les hommes et les femmes. Je vous remercie.
Thank you very much. In the next 15 minutes, before we close the session, I can only have 5 speakers, and I can have 6 if all of them can be brief and to the point. So since nous parlons français, I'll ask Dr. Aluano, Minister of Health, Cameroon, if you have something to say.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to speak in English, but if you permit me. Okay, I can speak briefly in French. Madame Chair, le Cameroun, comme tous les pays, est engagé à répondre efficacement à la tragédie du VIH-Sida. Et avec une prévalence de 5,5%, nous comptons beaucoup plus de femmes. C'est 60% de femmes qui sont affectées. Et les jeunes femmes, beaucoup plus encore, parce que pour les filles de 20 à 24 ans, c'est 8% de séroprévalence. Et pour les filles de 25 à 29 ans, c'est 10%. C'est dire que nous avons un très grand défi à relever ici. Et le Cameroun, dans le cadre de son plan stratégique, également dans le cadre de son programme de lutte contre la pauvreté, met un accent particulier sur le renforcement des capacités de la femme en matière d'éducation et également en matière de santé. Et donc, en matière de santé, nous travaillons beaucoup pour la prévention d'abord et surtout toucher les femmes en milieu rural. C'est un très grand défi et pour cela, nous avons adopté des stratégies de mobilisation sociale en mettant en place près de 6000 communautés dans lesquelles les femmes sont très actives. Nous avons aussi expérimenté un mécanisme très particulier avec les unités mobiles qui font, n'est-ce pas, les tests volontaires et le conseil, bien entendu. Et les femmes préfèrent beaucoup cette approche-là parce que avec le ministère des Affaires sociales, également le ministère de la Condition féminine au Cameroun, nous travaillons beaucoup pour que ces unités aillent même dans les marchés pour faire les tests. Et nous voyons beaucoup de femmes, n'est-ce pas, s'empresser pour connaître leur statut. Et cela est très intéressant. Et bien entendu, le programme de la prévention de la transmission mère-enfant est très efficace. Nous avons plus de 350 sites qui sont opérationnels et les ARV sont tout à fait disponibles et délivrés gratuitement aux femmes pour réduire la transmission du virus de la mère à l'enfant. Et nous pensons qu'il faut agir de manière intégrée et globale. C'est pour cette raison que nous avons relancé notre programme de santé de la reproduction qui développe les services de proximité. Compte tenu des contraintes de temps, je vais m'arrêter là et je vous remercie. Le Cameroun est déterminé à agir.
Merci beaucoup for your brevity. Now I have Joël Tanguay, Global Business Coalition on HIV/AIDS.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, our speakers today have made it very clear that time has come to invest in women and girls, and especially adolescent girls and not just the childbearing women, and to revisit our approaches to prevention, treatment and care, recognizing that the gender imbalances have fueled the epidemic as well as slowed down the response. So it is with this perspective in mind that the Global Business Coalition and its members have committed to support a variety of initiatives that aim to link private sector with other stakeholders. Many of you are in the room, around the table. Some of them are not around the table, like the International Women's Health Coalition and a variety of community groups of living people, of people living with AIDS on the ground. But we believe that the private sector has a unique role to play as an employer, as an investor, and as an influencer in the communities. There are a handful or maybe a dozen initiatives that one could mention from the private sector that are going directly in the direction of supporting women and girls and restoring the emphasis on women and girls in HIV programming. But these are far few between, and we definitely need, over the next 3 years, to scale up the business practices. And we've identified a number of directions. The first one is to enhance the employee program, so we extend coverage to spouse and often more than one spouse and dependents. The second one is to support girls' education, as studies show that even one additional year of schooling allows to decrease the chances of girls to contract HIV. The third is to support microenterprise and economic empowerment of women and girls. This is something right in the area of competency of businesses, and we have hopes to expand this dramatically. There's already quite a few best practices there. The fourth one is to develop greater access and integration of testing, treatment, and reproductive health care services. They are real issues here which need to be addressed. Another important point is to think of applying businesses' core competencies and not only the exemplary contribution of pharmaceutical industry to, for example, ZEDA's initiative, the microbicide research, but also to think of the marketing and messaging power of business, marketing for social changes, developing a new gender dynamic, and facilitating the introduction of those new prevention technologies. Last but not least, we have every hope to see expanded engagement, support, collaborations between businesses and national AIDS control programs, as well as the key institutions like the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria, and UNAIDS. So in other words, with your support, let us transform business response to prioritize the components that target women and girls and compensate for what is a systemic ignorance of the women's perspective. We also think that this will yield to then the next step is an ability to leverage business engagement to transform the societies then and shore up a new, stronger collective defense addressing the vulnerabilities of women and girls. So I look forward to the conversations that will develop at IAS and at the whole conference this week between the private sector representatives that are here as well as the agencies and governments represented here to help shape this up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In the next 10 minutes, since we were more than 10 speakers still there, we've had to discriminate. So if you come from the Global Business Coalition, you are no longer there. If you are from the UN family, you are no longer there. So I have like four presenters. One, Islamic Relief, the Holy See, International Federation of Trade Unions, and then the last political advisor to the Minister of International Development of Norway. So I'll start with the Islamic Relief for 2 minutes, Silverplay.
Okay, I'll try to make my comments within 2 minutes. Madam Chair, Your Royal Highness, distinguished colleagues, I'm speaking on behalf of Islamic Relief. Gone are the days when HIV/AIDS was known to be within the gay community, a disease of the gay community and drug users community. Gone are also the days when the disease was known to be within the Western society, a non-Muslim disease. Today, the reality is that HIV/AIDS is increasing at a rapid rate in Muslim communities the world over. Pakistan, Sudan, Egypt are living examples of increasing rates of HIV/AIDS in Muslim communities. The question is, what are Muslim communities doing in terms of its prevention of the disease, the spread of the disease? And the common response of many Muslim organizations and many Muslim communities is abstinence and faithfulness. The C in this case, where my colleague mentioned that it doesn't even exist in many Muslim communities. Is this approach pragmatic? Does it is it realistic? Does it work in terms of preventing the spread of the disease? And the answer is no, it's not. The question is the approach working? I agree with my colleagues that the approach is not working. The question that we ask ourselves, we should pause and ask ourselves, is that with women bearing the brunt of the disease in many communities, and with existing power structures and gender inequalities, how would women negotiate sex in patriarchal societies where they lack power to negotiate in power? And also, how do women abstain from sex when there's no food to eat? These are some of the practical questions that we should reflect and think upon when we look at HIV/AIDS, particularly within Muslim communities. And
so your time is up.
Okay.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'll now hear from the Holy See, from Robert Rido, Special Advisor on HIV/AIDS.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've arranged to distribute the statement that we prepared, so out of respect for the power of the Chair, I'll just make two short points that I think may deserve more attention in the final document. First of all, in his message to the Fourth World Conference on Women in Beijing, the late Pope John Paul II committed the 300,000 health care, social service, and education institutions of the Catholic Church to give priority attention to women and girls. And we believe that more leaders would benefit from doing the same, especially in those areas where women and girls do not now have equitable access to health care, education, and social services. The second point that I wanted to make is that increasingly leaders in the Catholic Church are targeting men and boys to engage them in the response to HIV and AIDS, and to involve them in learning about the ways that they can be respectful in their relationships with women, and also to help them understand that they can abstain from sex outside marriage and be mutually faithful during a lifelong marriage. And once again, we believe that these are strategies that do work. They have worked. They're evidence-based in terms of the behavior change that has taken place in many of the countries where the infection rate has been lowered. And we would like to encourage that attention to these strategies also be given, especially in targeting men and boys in this process. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Reverend. Male involvement is really very important. I shall now hear from the International Federation of Fair Trade Unions, Mr. Kamakon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We consider HIV/AIDS as a workplace issue, whether women and men work informal or in an informal economy or an environment. It is related to decent work or absence of work and poverty. We consider HIV/AIDS as both a consequence and a cause of poverty. And the importance of work is therefore important for us, and also in relations to the treatment, prevention, defense of the rights of workers at the workplace. We have now been able to have an understanding and agreement with the International Organization of Employers, and we have called upon governments also to join this workplace initiative. We have an international program on HIV/AIDS with a special focus on women, youth, and migrant workers. We work through our organizations at the regional and national level, through our teachers' organizations, public sector organizations, our organization for sex workers, for instance, in Brazil. We are reaching out also to civil society organizations. We are forming alliances with civil society organizations, community-based organizations. We want to remove the stigma and prejudice related to HIV and AIDS and to bring about an elimination of this scourge for all people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Our very last presenter is Mr. Torbjørn Fell, from political advisor of the Minister of International Development of Norway.
Thank you, Madam
All
Chair.
All the other presenters, you will forgive us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Your Royal Highness, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. To end the discussion, I would like to comment on participation and rights. Because I'm surrounded by strong women today making a difference. And we know that decision-making in general is dominated by men. At the same time, we see that those fighting HIV every day is mostly women and gay men. They are the ones doing the job. And therefore, I previously have called for greater involvement by heterosexual men. Male leaders need to be more visible in the fight against AIDS and for women's rights. The work of women and gay men is extremely important, but straight men need to take more responsibility for the brothers' behavior and make them change. To make women get power over their own body and to decide of their own sexuality and what they actually enjoy, we need a number of different tools and methods that I will not mention here. But some of us need to act a bit more revolutionary than we do today, and Norway is ready to take its share. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we are now going to the last session, the closing of this. Let me just thank you all for your patience with my guillotining. Unfortunately, I'm having to practice this and continue doing it because currently I'm the chair of the African Union Ministers of Health, all 53 of them. So I have no choice but to practice it. Thank you very much.
Thank you to all the speakers and to all the participants who have gone on with us during this discussion. And we had twice mentioned during this meeting that the call for action are the conclusions of the co-chairs here. But what we have done is, of course, to listen very carefully whether there are concrete possibilities and actions that could be taken on board. We will do so, and we will put the paper with all the concrete proposals also into the web so that there can be a concrete follow-up by those who are interested in doing so. And could I also say that I think, I mean, at least that was the spirit in which I participated here. One always learns in all these meetings, because there are experiences, you know, which you can also have from other countries, from other institutions. And I think everyone has realized that in his or her capacity, there will be a follow-up. That is at least what I intend to do. And it has been very concrete, what had been given as an impulse by Richard Feacham on the Global Fund. And everyone who is also a donor in the Global Fund or also receiving can express their own initiatives in the next future. And certainly what I can say for our country, for Germany, is that within our presidency of next year in the G8 and also in the presidency of the European Union, which is the first half of the next year, we will take up those questions and specifically take up the questions of the situation of women in the fight against HIV/AIDS. You can rely on this. I wanted to make that sure, because nothing that has been said is forgotten, not any impulse, and please let us stay engaged. That is what I think has come from this meeting of today. And could I lastly give the floor to Her Royal Highness Crown Princess Mette Marit of Norway. And I'm honored, and we are all honored, that she listened carefully to us and all the speeches and discussions. And she has generously offered to provide us with closing remarks. Could I just say some words? Her Royal Highness has been engaged in the HIV and AIDS issues for several years. Her studies at the School of Oriental and African Studies in London, as well as her work with the Norwegian Directorate of Development Cooperation, NORAD, in 2003, raised her interest in and concern for HIV and AIDS issues. And in April 2006, Her Royal Highness accepted the appointment as Special Representative for the Joint United Nations Programme on HIV and AIDS, a position she intends to use to fight stigmatization and discrimination of people living with and affected by HIV and AIDS. Her Royal Highness is particularly engaged in young people, as we have also mentioned today, and the importance of empowering so that they can protect themselves from HIV and its consequences. I'm pleased to give the floor to you, and thank you very much for participating, having participated in this meeting. Thank you very much.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for this opportunity to reflect on some key points from this high-level session. The focus on the increasing feminization of HIV/AIDS is a highly suitable way of entering into this 16th International AIDS Conference. To address the vulnerability of women, and particularly young women, is a central pledge in the declaration of the special session of the United Nations less than 3 months ago. This session has made it clear to all of us that it is possible to make women and girls less vulnerable to AIDS. It is unacceptable that young girls are 6 times more vulnerable than their peer boys. It is unacceptable that women are made vulnerable through sexual abuse, domestic violence, or harmful traditional practices. It is unacceptable that women are not in charge of their own sexuality and health. Girls and women must be allowed access to information and means to protect their own lives and the lives of their future children. In Bangkok 2 years ago, Nelson Mandela said, "History will surely judge us harshly if we do not respond with all the energy and resources that we can bring to bear in the fight against HIV/AIDS." It was said again in Das in New York, "Our generation will be measured again how we respond to the global catastrophe of women and AIDS." The discussion we've had here today make me hopeful for the future. Present here are leaders who are willing to deliver by taking the measures needed to reverse the pandemic and rectify some of the striking imbalances that hit women and girls the hardest. Today's discussion reflects that feminization of the HIV pandemic is caused by a complex mixture of underlying factors, uneven societal structures and power relations, lack of sexual and reproductive health for youth, and also lack of comprehensive health and AIDS services tailor-made for women's needs. Customary laws and practices that do not empower women and put young girls at risk. Legislation that does not ensure the basic right of women and girls. Widespread use of sexual violence and abuse. And major gender inequalities, for example, in terms of access to education and employment, as a cause and a consequence of HIV. All of us in this room are different in terms of background, roles, and expertise. But we have one thing in common. We are all in the fortunate position of being able to make positive change. By attending this session, I think we have all taken on a responsibility. We will be held accountable for how we respond to it. It is time for leadership, and I think it's the kind of leadership, visible leadership, that Mary Robinson called for. Delivery must reflect reality and match the real needs, not what we suspect people need or what we wish was the reality. This is about real people, about young girls who are more and more likely to contract a life-threatening virus the older they get, about HIV-positive women who are facing devastating and heartbreaking realities on a daily basis. Most of us need to listen more in order to capture that reality. Plowing through statistics and counting facts and figures may give some information, but the only way to find the real answers is to ask those concerned, to give women and girls a voice. Let them express their reality in their own words and define what their needs are. But this is not enough. We need more women at the table when decisions are made and strategies laid out. HIV-positive women are probably the strongest tools we have in building sustainable prevention programs for women and girls. Positive women know what made them vulnerable to HIV. They know which structures and traditions that need to be changed to protect future generations. We heard the challenge from the international community of women living with HIV and AIDS, calling us not to pay lip service, but be real about their essential role. Let us therefore give opportunity and voice to positive women, not as tokens and symbols, but as highly competent people. Let us celebrate and learn from what women are already doing, as Mozambique and Europe and the world YWCA called for. Let us use our roles and networks to empower these women and to engage together with them. I encourage you all to walk out of this room today, promising to follow up on today's call for action and to make a real difference for real people. Thank you.
On behalf of the organizing committee, the leadership committee of the International AIDS Society's 16th conference, it is my great pleasure to thank Her Royal Highness for her concluding remarks, to give thanks to all the presenters and all the participants in the discussions, to our eminent co-chairs, and to the Canadian government and the staff which have devoted so much time, energy, and imagination to bring about this gathering we've had today. I also want to simply say to you that as a person of the church, I have enjoyed 3 days of pre-conferences, two for Christian churches, and the third one, an interfaith conference. And I want to say to the Muslim, the Buddhist, the church representatives here, that the challenges that we have heard in terms of leadership, needed leadership to deliver for women and girls, is one that rests very heavily upon church leaders, upon religious leaders, because in many ways we come very late out in that struggle. So I will leave this room with a sense of commitment on behalf of all of us that what we have said shall be translated into words. It is time to deliver for all of us, those who have spoken and those who were unfortunate not to have been given the floor due to time constraints. Thank you to all of you who have honored the invitation from the Canadian government and from the leadership committee of IAS to come here to spend this afternoon on this important topic. And now we leave this room and attend the reception outside here. And during the next few days, we will translate into actions what we have been sharing with each other in words. Thank you all.